Accession number 9202, rule number 3.
Mr. Ray, reel 3. Could you tell me about the other training you did while you were at Crystal Palace, Mr. Ray?
Yes, I was. We used to do jogging before breakfast, and there was a commander. He used to take us out, take a couple of us, and we used to go jogging right around the environs, as it were, of the palace itself. And then we'd come back, fall in, and we'd fall in, and then be dismissed in the usual way, and then go to breakfast. What I was a little bit, if it could be called, disturbed about that, was that some men who hadn't been accustomed to getting up early in the morning were, well, used to faint while they were standing in the line, you know. And after breakfast, then we used to go on training how to form fours, and because in those days it was all form fours, you know, and marching here and marching there. We used to spend hours doing that in the morning, and we'd break up for dinner, and in some cases we used to have the same thing in the afternoon, and physical jerks in the morning to get our limbs into ship shape. And in the afternoon it was right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, you see. And it was amazing the fitness that we seemed to get ourselves into. Of course, working underground, down the pit, you know, you were inclined to get into certain postures which were very difficult for older men once to overcome, that kind of thing. But in my case, being young and muscles that were supple, it was much easier. And so that used to be a lot. We sometimes used to march Streatham Common. That was a place that I remember well. And we set up whilst we were going out in these little short walks, as we called them. We became intimate with the people who lived round about in Norwood, Upper Norwood. And as far as I'm concerned, and several others of us, we used to be Methodists. We weren't C of E, but although we'd been given ourselves, we'd been recorded as being C of E, we were Methodists. And I was a Western Methodist, and of course, they were in those days very strong. And we got to know the people round about, and it was very, very funny, because when we first went there and we were in Mufti, we soon got to know people, and they in turn got to know us. Then when we were fitted up with our uniforms, we had naval uniforms, and I well, like others, the people didn't know us, which caused quite a bit of confusion. Anyway.
What was that uniform like? Could you describe it? The uniform you were issued with?
It was a naval uniform. It had the usual... This uniform that we were wearing, it was just... there was no lanyard, nor no silk, as we call them, silks, you know. black suit. But really, the naval uniform and the cap band only said RND, Royal Naval Division. The usual. That was about all that signified what we were, you see.
When you say your cap band said R&D, Royal Naval Division. When did you become part of that? Because you were originally Royal Marine Land Forces. When did you become aware of the fact that you were in the Royal Naval Division and indeed in a battalion of that?
Well, from the very outset, it was a transitional stage, but it wasn't transitional. We were all, if someone had said you were in the Naval Division when you were in Newcastle, after you transferred that very day, you wouldn't have known any different. It was so quietly and efficiently just sort of worked in that way.
What was your company and your battalion in the Naval Division?
Well, I was in C Company. Now, I don't know whether I've said it before, but I was a battalion signaller.
Which battalion, though?
The Ensign.
Yeah.
The Ensign Battalion.
When did you start your training as a signaller? Was this at the same time as you started your basic training?
I started the signalling in Blandford.
Okay, well, we'll come to that.
First of all, when we left Crystal Palace, the first place we went to was for musketry training. And
where was that at?
That was at Chatham. We went to the Chatham Barracks, David Barracks, and we were there a week, and then we went down to Sheerness for a week's musketry training.
What did this consist of, musketry training?
Well, firing, you know, getting used to using the rifle, use the firing, passing out as efficient with the rifle.
How long did it take?
Week. Without a week. On the way down, we passed the HMS Bulwark, which was a battleship. And when we were down at Sheerness that week, she blew up. And it caused quite a stir amongst the, naval people. Whether the ship had been mined or whether someone had happened to drop a shell or something like that. And anyway, that is what happened to the Bulwark, and that was the finish of it. And I had a brother-in-law who had an escritoire made out of some of the wood from the Bulwark.
Where did you go from?
And then from there we went. Oh, when we came back, we came back to Portsmouth. We were in Portsmouth for a weekend, just to complete some training. I couldn't really say what we were really doing in Portsmouth. We were only there for a weekend.
From there you went to Blandford.
And then from there we went on to. Yes, went on to Blandford, yes.
So you left Chatham's around about early November, and yes, you arrived at Blandford late November or early December, is that correct?
It would be about mid-November, because we had to get installed there in November. We had to get installed in Blandford, because we were there several weeks before Christmas.
So you got there mid-November?
Mid-November, yes. And whilst we were there, of course, we were the first ones to go into Blandford.
Were they still building it?
They were still constructing it, yes.
What could you see of that?
they were building these Nissen huts. They were, you know, good lengthy assemblance, you see. You know the idea with doors that crossed in the centre of the buildings, and you were divided. You could have a platoon, say, in one section and platoon in the other, something like that nature, in the building itself.
What was accommodation like in these Nissen huts? I presume you stayed in one while you were at Blandford.
Well, we were in them. Yes, we lived in them. See,
what were they like?
Well, if you may see them today in hospitals. They've just got the beds are laid, so just raised a little bit above the floor, and you slept on the beds there, and that was that.
They were reasonably comfortable, were they?
Oh yes, absolutely yes, absolutely comfortable. And then there was the mess room was a similar thing, but of course they had the tables. You went into the mess room for your meals. Yeah?
Were the meals still as good as they'd been at Crystal Palace? Was the quality still high?
Well, the quality, no. I'd say it was not quite as quality. It wasn't quite as good as Crystal Palace, because the catering at Crystal Palace was done by men who had been, you know, in that line of country, well, some time, and it had to be worked into. It had to sort of work it up to reach a standard in Blandford, but eventually, well, there was quite a lot of waste of bread many a time, because there were slices of bread that used to be flying, jam and bread used to be flying all over the mess room at times, you know. In fact, we had an officer, he was in D Company, and he was, his name was Sinclair Teasdale, lieutenant. He was sub-lieutenant, man. And he used to take us on road matches, this chap. And I recall once when he was orderly officer of the day, the orderly officer's job was to go around and see that everything was all right in the meal times, you see. And one particular tea time, he was coming to see if there was any complaints when someone threw a slice of jam and bread and caught him right in the face. And the beauty of it was with this man, he took it all in good part. And his answer to that was, well, he came in the evening and the hut that I was living in, he threw in two pair of boxing gloves still for the men to have a go. So they formed a sort of a boxing ring, see, which that was to pass the time away. And actually, it was discovered that we had one or two champions. We had the Pitman's champion of the north of England, and we also had another champion from Liverpool named Kid Doyle. Well, Kid Doyle was a lightweight, and the chap from Durham was a heavyweight, and of course, between the two of them, there's a big difference, you see, because this. The Pitman's champion, of course, the Liverpool man would go stalking around and say, I'd knock seven different colours, you know, out of the this chap from Newcastle. And eventually they were matched. Of course, Kid Doyle didn't have a chance because he was a lightweight. This chappy from North of England, of course, he'd been a heavyweight. Well, he very soon put paid to the Liverpool chap. And so that was the kind of thing. And we used to go route matches from there. But as
what
I
would
say,
you do on a route march? Can you describe?
Well,
a
we used to watch. We watch from one route match we made. We went to Lyme Regis. Oh, we went to Bridport. From Bridport to Dorchester. Dorchester, we stayed the night at Dorchester in the Corn Exchange. We put up there. we had a band leading us, and we went on from Dorchester to Lyme Regis, or Bridport to Lyme Regis. I'm not sure now which exactly, but there was Bridport and Dorchester came into it before we reached Lyme Regis. And we stayed a day in Lyme Regis. Actually, we left the camp about the Thursday of the week and travelled to, walked to Dorchester or wherever it was, the first 15 miles, and then stayed overnight, and then on to Lyme Regis.
While you were marching, did you sing or anything like that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we used to set ditties to this particular officer that I'm speaking about, and of course, he used to join in, even though it was against him. See, but it used to be great fun. Mind you, it was very tiring, but it was very it had its exhilarating experience. You see, when you go through Bridport and the band stuck up, you see, and people lined the streets, and it was great. Before that, whilst you were walking without the music played a very important part in a soldier's life, especially on route marches, because it used to revive the flagging spirit, as it were, and away you went, you see, filled you up a bit, you know. And that was that.
Did you get regular rests, you know, while you were on route march, or did you just carry on till you got there?
No, we had, oh no, it's stop to rest. I used to think it rather funny, not funny, but you know, the adjutant was a man named Smallwood. But he was a real soldier. He used to ride horseback. He used to ride up and down the, you know, spurring you on a little bit. Now come on a little bit, but come on, don't flag and don't nothing with this. And that was his name, Smallwood. And of course he used to go up and down on horseback, and I used to think, that's all right for you, sort of thing. That was that. And we stayed a day, as I said, at Lyme Regis, and I, along with others, we went for a paddle in the sea. That would do our feet good. Salt water on the feet. It was the worst thing we could do. They should never have allowed us to go in there, because the next day we couldn't walk. We had to walk, but there was scores of us fell out. We couldn't get any further because of the salt on our feet.
What happened when you fell out of a route march?
Well, we got back to camp just as best as we could, you know, and then trail back. Couldn't They tried to keep us going as far as long as we could, but the feet was so sore, it really couldn't. Absolutely, it was like walking on nails. You see. However, we got back to camp, and once we got back to camp and washed our feet and so forth, well, it wasn't too bad.
Did you do any tactical training? You know,
yes,
mock
attacks? We used to do night work as well. We did a lot of ambush work at night time.
What did that consist of?
Well, I don't know whether you know Blandford area at all, but there were some Burberry Rings, I think they were called. A hill. And round about there, we did night training. Forays and, you know, along the pretending we were meeting the enemy, or the enemy was meeting us, or something like that. We were pretending to be searching for, well, should I say, the enemy.
Was this successful, this night work?
Well, it's... I didn't. Looking back, I didn't think there was any success, really much about it. Because when we got into active service, it wasn't really of any use. You see, we were too confined, comparatively confined, in the Dardanelles when we first got into there. That I don't know. I don't say that it did very much good, but then. At that time, we would think that this didn't do very much good. The training was not only the physical side; it was more, it was the mental, the mind. To see what you would happen. You see, for instance, you would pass a message. A message would go down the line. Enemy mustering on the right, and you're all in darkness. And by the time it reached halfway down the line, they'd be saying, "Coleman's mustered on the right." A bit of a funny, you know, that was developed into a bit of a funny remark. "Coleman's mustered on the right." And that was passed along. And that's that kind of thing. Then we used to come back and have cocoa. Say about 12 o'clock midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, sometime like that. And come back and they would say, one man said, this cocoa's cold, sir. I remember this because this man, he'd been a recruit, but he'd been a conscript. And the captain in charge, he said, yes, he said, it's been there since 1914 when you didn't join up, you know, to try and be a little bit of sarcasm, you see.
That's later in the war, though. You did these nights.
That was the beginning of the war. That was before ever we went on active service.
Oh yeah.
We're talking about being on night maneuvers, you see, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but you didn't have any conscripts with you in 1914, did you?
No, we couldn't. But then, it was a sarcastic remark. That's all.
What about daytime tactical manoeuvres? What did you do in those?
Well, we did a lot of this work with the bayonet, you know, punching the sacks that were in rows where you charge in the enemy, in, out, on guard, that kind of thing. And if you weren't doing that, you'd be stripped. Not quite to the waist, because it was wintry weather then, but it was chin and chest out, shoulders back, head backward bend, you see, forward stretch, that kind of thing.
Did you do any practice rush attacks and things like that?
That's the kind of thing we did when we were stabbing these sandbags that were hanging up, you know, or hanging down, whichever way you kind of
When did you start your training as a signaller? Because I believe you said you started that at Blandford.
Oh, yes, that's... well, I was also a signaller. I've got to... I started as a signaller, yes.
What did that involve, the training?
Well, it was used in flags and the heliograph. There was we had a lamp. I don't know what it was called, if I'm right in saying it should be about that square.
About a foot.
And we carried this thing. We pushed the handles, pushed the rod of the flag, a couple of them in, you know, under the leather strap which was used for carrying the lamp, and we used to carry it that way, two of us, and we used to, well, learn the Morse code and all the various
semaphore. Did you find that difficult?
Oh yes, I never got to, I got the rudiments of it, and I never really got to know all that I should have known about signalling. Well, we had a yeoman of signals, a man in the navy at that time who was the yeoman of signals. He had his cross flags. He wore the cross flags, and he had three stars. And he was called a yeoman. He was a petty officer and a yeoman of signals. And what I would say that what he didn't know about signalling wasn't worth knowing. And we were under his charge, and an officer. And the officer was a man named Wilson, and he came from Norfolk, Dursingham in Norfolk. That's me remembering that. And I remember that because years afterwards, on active service, I became his batman.
Well, who picked you as a signaller, or did you volunteer for it?
I think I partly volunteered and partly picked. Well, I think that generally, when you're looking for your men, in any walk of life, you look for the ones you think are the most bright, don't you? Because we were a real crowd. You're a crowd of miners, and at first sight, well, it's up to the people that are selecting you, isn't it?